Got a bad bitch on me.
What?
Got a bad bitch on me. She D T F.
She tell me she
D T F.
I heard she
D T F.
What?
And you ain't hanging with the team if you ain't down to fuck.
Okay. Well, Lil' Mama bag.
Welcome to DTF, the Daryl Timmery Fun Hour, the greatest sex education comedy game show currently podcast in the known universe. I am your resident sexuality educator, Dr. Timmery.
And I am your often sexuality educated Daryl Charles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
how this works.
Yeah. Collectively, we are doing like a whole thesis project for you. And then you will also be Dr. Daryl.
I was telling somebody yesterday. I was like, yeah, I've essentially, the show is my capstone and should be able to get me accreditation.
Yeah, because this show, as we've been belaboring, has been around for 10 years. Yeah. And if it takes you more than 10 years to get your degree, they start getting mad at one at some point. They like kick you out of school if you take too long to dissertate.
Yep. They usually, yeah, they just, they start recommending other schools for you to go to. Yes. So.
And then we will both just be like emeritus.
Yeah.
Because I don't fully understand what that job means.
Emeritus just means that you don't, you're old and we appreciate you. And so you can call yourself whatever you want, but you have no power here anymore.
That's so accurate.
Yeah.
That's how I feel. Yeah. All right. Well,
the only time I when I was at Temple and I was a work study student, I was doing deliveries in one of the buildings. We'll keep it that way. Doing deliveries is one of my work study job, and delivering to one emeritus professor, and in his very small office. He had a one of those like TV carts from when we were in elementary school with a nice fat porn box just on top of it. And I was like, emeritus.
Was it Cosby?
No.
Just when you were like, we're going to keep that quiet, I immediately was like, oh my God. Like,
he did walk by me during my graduation, I believe.
Oh.
One of the, he always gave the keynote
commencement, yeah,
the commencement speech, yeah.
So that is a very good time to introduce our special guest today, returning to the show.
Very true.
We have a striking WGA writer, known for a variety of very cool TV credits, including formerly on Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. Welcome to the show, Allison Zeidman. How are you doing?
Good, thank you for having me.
Welcome back.
Yeah,
thanks. Yeah,
thanks for being here.
It's nice to be on strike. I was between shows, so we're not unemployed. I am on strike.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for the folks listening at home who may not have like a ton of background on this, can you give them a quick and dirty on the WGA strike?
Yeah. So the Writers Guild, also SAG, the union for actors, and all the various unions, they renegotiate what's called a minimum basic agreement contract with the studios for the WGA. That's every 3 years. Our contract deadline was coming up, so negotiations were beginning. And, you know, there are some sort of like existential problems with the industry that affect not just writers, but like everyone in entertainment, such as like, you know, use of AI is a big one. And then just the fact that, you know, to save money for shareholders and to add to their CEOs' salaries, you know, seasons have gotten shorter, writers' rooms have gotten smaller, you know, in terms of the acting side, like they are no longer, you know, series regulars are like less of a thing. You're kind of downgraded, and that affects your pay rate and your residuals and blah, blah, blah. Residuals are another big one, streaming residuals, where, you know, you should be getting money every time the episode is played because the streamers are so secretive about the algorithm. Streaming residuals are like nothing. So all like lots of big issues that the guild wanted to discuss. And pretty much the response to everything was, you know, we reject your offer and we refuse to make it counter. So negotiations are not going well. The negotiation committee called for a strike authorization vote. Overwhelmingly, WGA members were like, yes, this is important. We are willing to strike if it comes to it. We had a 98% yes rate, which is the highest it's ever been. Also, you know, the other unions that have been supporting us, because again, like, you know, their contracts negotiations are coming up too, and they also feel that these are, you know, major issues that threaten, like, basically, like, any of this being an actual career anymore, as opposed to like a day rate kind of gig job. There's been overwhelming support, so I am hopeful. I think that the fact that despite such a clear indication that we would be willing to strike, and the fact that like so many other unions, and you know, now in terms of the strike is happening and it's like out of the world, like public support, and like certainly I think that writers are like winning the PR campaign. Because of all that, and they're still willing to like, you know, let this go on, not come back to the table to negotiate. I think it's really like a statement to workers in the labor movement at large of like it's CEOs versus everybody else. And we're making a statement right now, like, of everybody else, don't think of doing this because we will not negotiate. But
it is a weird time for labor rights.
Totally.
And I did hear yesterday that like SAG also authorized a strike too, right?
This has never happened before, of like all the major entertainment unions being like, okay, yes, we all feel this way. Usually the WJ is pretty unified, but elsewhere it's sort of like either the leadership or the members aren't like necessarily like willing to take some of the, you know, the risk of threatening a strike. But just overwhelmingly from the beginning, SAG, the OTC, which is like production crew folks, the Teamsters leader, she is badass. She has a Jimmy Hoffa tattoo. You know, if she's on your side, it's like, well, we're gonna do great.
I just feel like it's such a weird like attempt to take on this, especially this particular set of groups, because like, of course you're gonna, not only are you on the right side of history, but you have everyone's favorite celebrities and the people that make all of their favorite things. Like, and who's gonna come out on the other side? Some like ugly old rich guy to be like, nah, come on. I've never really done anything charming and I'm not particularly affable, but like I want heated floors in my eighth bathroom. Come on.
The guy who runs Warner Brothers Discovery, you see over the weekend, he was giving a commencement speech. Everyone was just chanting, pay your writers, clap, 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 clap. It was great.
Yeah.
Nice.
David's public a support. The Warner Discovery merger is like, Full Frontal is one of the casualties of the many shows that were canceled, and jobs at all levels, even like the executive level, like people have been laid off. So, yes.
Yeah, it seems like a very bad deal all around whole thing.
I have some very personal feelings about David.
The nice thing about the strike is that, you know, going up against Amazon, right, is who are very well known for trying to stop their people from unionizing.
Yes.
They finally come up against a union big enough, deep enough, that they can't just steamroll them. They can't just do these illegal things that they have been doing and not being held accountable for because of.
I'm sure that's a factor too, though, of like, you know, I would imagine that some of the various companies, like especially if it's like broadcast versus streaming, like they have different priorities. They might be like on different pages in terms of like what they're all willing to give or not give, but I would imagine, you know, certainly for Amazon, this is about, yeah, it's about how the company is going to approach and treat and yield or not yield to unions generally.
And
Tamara, to your point of just like, who is on the other side? Again, yeah, I think it's just because like they don't give a shit about looking like the villains, clearly. Mm-hmm. I've been working on a group of late night writers. I'm not leading it, I'm just writing for it. Are doing this like weekly YouTube show, Contract TK, and it's like a late night show, but all for like strike news and jokes and stuff. And I wrote a joke that was like, you know, the WGA has SAG, Yahtzee, the Teamsters, and the AMTP has like the League of Inflatable Rat Salesmen. Like this, this is a great time for them. Scabby the Rat is out in full force.
Yeah.
For real. The resurgence.
Yeah, mm-hmm. this is a good time to head to our first regular segment, because our first piece of fucking news. Is very related to this, and we can tie in directly to what we've been talking about. So our first story today has to do with the first union of strippers in the U.S. in like a decade. So strippers from the Star Garden Topless Dive Bar in North Hollywood unanimously won their union election, 17-0. This is after a great deal of time they've been doing this, because the venue was contesting things for a really long time and they had been challenging the ballots. But the National Labor Review Board scheduled the opening for last Thursday. And this is very hopeful for the industry, because this is an industry that is not often organized like this. The workers tend to be very independent. There's been a lot of issues with performers being either miscategorized as employees or independent contractors and being expected to do the worst of both worlds. And this has really big potential consequences for the industry at large. So I'm very, very excited for them. What are your all thoughts?
I thought it was absolutely, I mean, well, you know, I'm pro labor. Yay. Even when I was an engineer, I was in a union. And I think, yeah, I was in the union as a grad student. Yeah, we outside. Anyway, the crazy thing was like some of their the demands that they had, which were things like, we don't want to be recorded while we're dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so no, you had to go to on strike for that.
Oh yeah, they wanted really basic stuff like protection from the security. When a customer is acting up, the security has to actually do something. And one of the other ones was like not letting customers stay in the club after hours. Like these are the most basic things. They are not asking for anything exorbitant. They're asking for like basic workplace protections. They're like, please, no more asbestos. You know, like
really right. Stuff. And that's usually the funniest thing about it. And I actually for the WGA, it was cool that they released the documents about or at least screenshots of the contract negotiations, because it was like, yeah, we're asking for very reasonable things, and they're just refusing to talk to us. So yeah, mm-hmm. It's like the strippers are like, hey, can you make that guy turn his camera off? Ah,
yeah.
That's his phone.
Yeah, the WGA, it's like what we're asking for would basically be just like 2% of the profits. Company by company didn't break down. Somebody released that last week and it was like 0.017. so yeah, I'd say like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of like what the equivalent for the strippers is, but it's like, can we just like, I don't know, can people just like not spit in our faces? Just right. Like, would love that if that was just,
I just
like,
want to be able to buy bread and perhaps some cold cuts.
Yeah.
To put between them. And they're like, ah, look at you all with your bread.
Right. Like, can I, like, I need to be able to afford to put gas in my car so I can get to the club. And it's like, what's wrong with your feet? Why can't you just walk?
Right. You can run in those heels.
Yeah. If you get, well, yeah, if you so, can twirl around a pole on them, then you certainly can walk 18 miles on them.
It's been a really interesting thing with that industry, because it's like there's not a lot to directly compare it to. They joined in a union of performers because it's like the closest comparison. But like one of the things that I talk about a lot when I'm lecturing on like the history of burlesque is that strip clubs come from the same family tree. Burlesque and stripping and go-go, they all come from the same origin. But like what stripping really is it's about your stage performance, but it's really about the emotional labor with the clients. Mm-hmm. And that's also why it's so stigmatized, is because it's like, it's not just the nudity. It's the fact that like, you know, we have objectified women's attention in addition to their sexuality, that like it is heavily stigmatized and shamed that you're like, you know, just doing things with guys that people think you shouldn't get money for. Like, and that includes like sitting there listening to their problems, because like that's a lot of what strippers get paid for too.
Yeah. I'm sure it's also like, you know, it ruins the male fantasy to think of like, oh, this is a woman doing her job and working, and like she doesn't actually, of course she cares about me. It's not just a job for her, you know, like.
Well, I mean, you see how people treat anyone who's working for them. If people can throw Big Macs at people at Wendy's, then, you know, be like, we don't even make that sandwich. You know, I don't like it. It's like, people are like that. I think that's probably, maybe that's why I was never a strip club guy. I went somewhere. Well, because like, yeah, I mean, you know, I was there for the pure objectification. Like, it's like, I just want to see bodies. And if they want to touch me, that'd be great. And then I had to be told that I couldn't use my hands. But, you know, that's just a coming of age story. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I remember I would be at strip clubs, and strippers would come up and like try to engage me in conversation. And I was like, wait, why are we doing this? How you been? I'm fine.
Yeah.
Here's $20.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that's, you know, I don't expect you to be like checking in on me. Like, I don't think that this should be part of your job, but I'm sorry that you have to do it.
I mean, and maybe it's just me. I don't want the was it the girlfriend experience? Mm. But you know, to each his own, I guess, or each their own.
Yeah,
I was just never one. And I have to just say this so my friends know that if they're listening, that I'm still upset with them. I was not. So, you know, you're in your early 20s and you just get a job. So, hey, we're going to strip clubs. And I always went to hang out with my friends just to hang out with them. And then we'd be hanging out, we'd be getting drunk, and they'd be like, we're going to strip club. And I'd be like, guys, I asked earlier and you said no. So I wore track pants, man. Mm. You can't just throw me into a strip club scenario. I'm wearing sweat. God, my God. So yeah, I still am upset with that, and I'm sorry to all those ladies that wasn't my call.
Yeah, and I'm sure what you were concerned about, of course, with going to a strip club and track pants was just you felt underdressed. That was really the
only totally. Thing. Yeah. Well, you know that's like creep tactic number one.
But yeah. I guess that is. Yeah. I assume it was more about the erection.
Boner town. Yeah.
Boner town.
Well, it's the idea is that you wear a thinner fabric so you get more bang for your buck. Right.
Yep.
And it's like, I get that that's a thing, and I don't want to be associated with it. The thing, I don't like belts. Ugh. And I wanted to drink with my friends, but yeah. Ugh.
I didn't know that that was a thing. And
emotional labor, baby.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why some clubs have like dress code policies. It's not because they're trying to be fancy. Like,
sure, yeah,
they're trying to keep out particular elements.
And yeah, they're trying to be racist. Or
no, that's dance clubs. That's dance clubs. Strip clubs, they're like, no.
Yeah.
Please, everybody come in.
Yeah. So yeah, shout out to the stripper unit. One of the funny things is that the Star Garden is currently closed because you know, like you can't really run a club very strip well club. Without any strippers in it. So this is hopefully going to be good for everybody. I would also just like to give a shout out to, so in this CNN article about it, the stripper who goes by Velveeta, I just want to give you all of my love because that is possibly the best stage name I've ever heard for a dancer. And then she was just talking about like this, you know, there's been a lot of loss on both sides. So hopefully this is a window of opportunity for everybody to go forward and take money from men.
How long were they, do you know how long they were striking?
16 months.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Yes.
What was the club like? You know what? People are going to come for the DJ. People like love DJ set is why they come to the strip club.
It's like, look, you have to shake every drink, bartender, every single one, nothing stirred. All right. Everything's shaken and all your hands are above your head at all times.
Yeah. What I really want to do is go into a club where smoking is allowed. Food costs a weird amount of money for being very bad. And then the drinks are inexplicably like $30. That's what I want from a venue. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm going for. Yeah.
That's the other part of the strip club experience. It's like, so yo, we could just drink anywhere else for half the price.
Oh my God. And then the food is just, it's just like a tray of like chicken tendies and fries and stuff. I mean, depending on where you go, some of them have, you know, like a whole proper buffet or you can get your steak dinner or whatever. But like last time I went into a club and we got like a whole VIP corner and yeah, they gave us food and it was like chicken tendies and like fries and stuff. And I'm like, I'm going to eat this. Don't get me wrong.
But well, you know, my thinking is that, you know, if it's a strip like this one in North Hollywood, which sounds like it was not treating its workers very well, maybe it's just like cosmically fair that there is exploitation of the consumer as well, and that is sort of a balance. And what I'm saying is they should not have won their contract. They should have just settled for men having to pay $30 for chicken tenders. I completely changed my mind. I'm like, no, it was definitely okay.
It's a 2-dance minimum and they post that outside and then you walk in and like there are no dancers, you still gotta pay for 2 dances. Sorry, I don't know what to tell you.
You got the security guard. Just
the like. Security guard, yeah. Not security guard, so, you know, that's fine. And then we pivot to Magic Mike.
Doing the electric slide. They didn't say what kind of dance.
Yeah, yes, sir. So that is going to take us to our next story in the fucking news. This one is incredibly silly. There's not a whole lot we're going to be able to say about this, but it has become a regular segment of this show to talk about what dumb shit have they done in Florida this week. Mm. And most one of the more recent ones is that a fifth grade teacher, whose name is Jenna Barbie, which is just a delightful name, she showed her class Disney's 22 animated film Strange World, and it was after they did a bunch of standardized testing all day. So this is just, you know, like dystopian from the jump, but they do
they did standardized testing, and outside of that they had been talking about ecology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so then she a direct tie into the movie. Yeah,
so she picks this movie that is all about ecosystems and is adorable and it's very cute, and I don't think it did very well because it wasn't advertised very well, but it was very cute. And it features, oh no, gay characters. And that's not even like a major plot point. In fact, I would argue that it's just like very normalized representation of just a queer kid.
And that's the problem.
And that is the problem. And so some student in class who was a terrible mom then like told her mom, and then now they are investigating this. They need like evidentiary witnesses and documents pertinent to the case. So the Florida Department of Education is now coming after her for inappropriate conduct because DeSantis doesn't really have any other platform running for president other than hating queers. So that's where we are.
And minorities.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Come on. Abortion. Multitudes.
And women. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're capable people.
Of hating any and all people. Yes.
Whatever it takes.
He loves fetuses. Loves a fetus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The idea
not a person. That's the key.
Yeah. Yeah.
The idea of a fetus. When the rubber meets the road, sorry, buddy, you're on your own. But the idea of a fetus. Yeah, man. It's now the kids have to be harassed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's if you were still wavering on whether this was a good or bad thing, now these children have to be individually interrogated by administrators for watching a movie.
Yeah.
If you thought that the movie didn't have a big impact, if you thought the movie had a big impact before the individual children were put into a room and a stranger asks them pointed questions about it, you know, all that attention is going to make all of the kids gay.
I wonder, like, what do you guys think? Just because I feel like, you know, all of this, and in particular, like what teachers are allowed to teach, has been so just like under attack around the country, and like especially in Florida. I wonder if like she knew exactly what she was doing. Mm. And, you know, now it's like, yeah, like ecology, or like it's like, you know what? Fuck this. Like, I'm gonna make a point.
That's possible. It could be like a Scopes monkey trial situation where it's like, I'm specifically teaching evolution just so we can challenge this. Yeah.
Like a, I don't know, or like a brave thing to do.
Yeah. Cause she took to TikTok and like, she's not backing down. She has been very vocal about like, this is completely appropriate content. And like, they're, you know, like they're being ridiculous. And I think that's a really good point. And it's also really funny cause like the film has multiple themes in it. And one of them is, you know, the ecology and the, you know, having to change your mind because you find out new information is another really big point. And like
that's
about
the dangerous part. That's
yeah. There's also a whole plot point about like being a good parent involves being able to pivot when you get new information and doing the thing that is best for your family and the future, and not necessarily the thing that you grew up thinking was the most important thing, or the things that you have decided for yourself are the most important things. That is an actual major plot point of it, is like, to be a good parent means being like willing to learn. And so
that's the most dangerous idea that has ever been established.
Yeah. It seems like, I don't know, they're just like, creatively, it sounds like a great movie, but like, as you mentioned that it wasn't well advertised, I was like, maybe the people that are in decide, you know, in charge of making the decisions about the advertising, the marketing, were like, we don't really care this, or like, we don't think like, you know, these messages are really going to play in a major market. So even though we have this whole ass finished movie, we're just going to kind of be like, just put it out, see what happens.
Yep. We'll fart it out. We'll see if it becomes like a cult classic or something that we'll be able to make money off of without ever telling people that we stand behind this movie.
Yeah, it was one of those weird ones where like, I really didn't hear anything about it. The only trailer I saw didn't really give me much of a hint of what it was about. It was just like very impressive visuals. And I'm like, I'm sure it'll be fine. Like, but I didn't really get around to watching it until one day. And then I was seeing things on Twitter about people who are like, yeah, go woke and go broke, because it's got an interracial marriage, it's got this queer kid, it's got these like themes of being a steward of the planet. And so we can't have any of those things.
I've said it before and I'll say it again, their biggest fear is that their children are gonna learn and then come home and tell them that they're pieces of shit. And and the other fear is that most people will realize that this is that there are certain ways of thinking that are dead and dying, and we will just move on without them. And so they will kick and scream and burn the country down until we don't do that. Putting these laws and all this draconian, very vague nonsense in place is a method to try to silence teachers and keep them from doing these sorts of things. And the only way to fight it is to do it anyway, and then have to deal with the consequences. I personally can't wait for colleges to stop taking students from Florida because they are categorically stupid. It's like your board of education is bad. You didn't learn enough. We don't want you. Oof. Is the next step to me. But, you know, I'm not a provost or whatever the fuck.
Well, I feel bad for those students, right? Because like the teachers also indicated that there were multiple kids in this classroom who have already come out and identified somewhere on LGBTQ like identity. So like, you're not going to we've said a million times, like, you're not going to turn gay. You're just going to make it safer for the kids who were there already. You know, mm-hmm. like, that's all this is ever going to be. And I, there's a part of me that feels really bad for the narc kid, because this kid is clearly, like, indoctrinated by a shitty parent. Like, we've all known that kid, and maybe they'll grow up and be terrible also, but it's very possible that kid will grow up and be like, God damn it, it was a fucking narc. For like,
I wonder.
Especially the kid even knew that they were like narking. If they were just like, right. like, what'd you do in school today? And they were like, we watched this movie. And the parents went like, what?
Yeah, oh, it was like, what movie was it? It's A Strange New World. It was like, that gay movie. And then all of a sudden, yeah. And I'm sure that's what happened. And I'm sure they sounded just like that. That's that movie that they've been calling gay. And then I'm not gonna do accents anymore.
Is that your Florida accent?
That is my Florida accent. I guess I have cousins from Florida. I don't sound like that. but yeah, it's such a naked attempt at relevance in a world that I don't that for the large part I don't exist in, and I just can't wait for everybody to get on the same page of. It's not ignoring these people, but knowing that they exist and then operating around them is the thing that they fear the most.
Yeah.
All right. Well, shout out to this.
Sorry if you live in Florida.
Yeah.
Well, I think also just like obviously everybody like is aware of what's been happening in Florida, but I think just like the message to queer people around the country, and I think like anytime something like this happens, and like probably especially for people like in our social circles where it's like largely like this is accepted, there's community, like the othering or the you know, just sort of like the hatred is hopefully, you know, more rare because you're in a different environment, but just like, yeah, the pain of being like, oh right, this is what millions of people think of me and who I am. And yeah, I think it can be also like just like a weird moment to be like, oh, if I felt like I was in my like kind of like safe bubble, and then like to be reminded like, nope.
Yep. It sucks. And
but on a positive note though, I'm gonna just pivot us to better news. In our last piece of fucking news, this is good news for the queers. So the FDA has finally updated blood donation policy to include gay and bisexual men. So they used to just have like a general kind of ban on if you were a man who had sex with men, or even a person who had sex with men who had sex with men. And now they're going to use individual risk-based questions that are the same for everybody, regardless of orientation, sex, and gender. So it's not necessarily everybody. It's gay and bisexual men in monogamous relationships, people who are not having anal sex is a part of it.
Essentially, they're changing the question to be like, have you had anal sex in the past 3 months?
With a new partner.
With a new partner. And so if you have had anal sex in the past 3 months with a new partner or partners, then you are deferred for like a year. If you've had anal sex, then you're deferred for like 3 months, but now it's a blanket thing. And
or if you have more than one partner in the last 3 months, you're also deferred for 3 months as well.
Yeah.
Was it really that different? I mean, like, it's not a blanket ban, but then the causes for like deferral targeted at.
It is a big difference in it's no longer 12 months, it's down to 3. That's one thing. But the other thing is that now it's not based on your gender. It's based on multiple partners and anal sex with new partners. So previously the assumption is that like straight people can be doing whatever, but their HIV risk is somehow less than a gay man who's been with the same partner for 10 years or something. Like that was the implication. And now it's like, if you're in a monogamous relationship, have at, like, come through.
I don't know. It just sounds like sort of like the letter of the law versus the spirit is like, it's kind of like, we're still, I don't know. Well, like, we're being more accurate about like health risk.
Yeah, and that's what they're saying. Like, they're, you know, in light of new information and like
prejudice and science going on there. Yeah.
Yeah. But I will make this all about me and say that I'm very upset because I have a joke about this, because I've sold my blood. And there are three questions that say if you answer yes to these, you can't do it. And one of them was, have you ever had sex with a man, comma, even once? And that was the literal thing. And I very much comedically enjoy the comma, even once part. you know, now I have to work hard because of the damn FDA. We need small government. Stop with all this nonsense. But yeah, you know, good for the blood supply. Because, you know, that's the real thing. The real winner of this is people who are in car accidents. You know.
Yeah. Well, the 12-year to 3-month change happened during the pandemic, right? So it was kind of like.
Yeah, they needed the blood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, maybe we should stop with this prejudicial policy so that we can actually care about people's health.
Yeah. It's always so interesting to me, and obviously I am not super familiar with all the hematology things, but I've never understood some of these kind of arbitrary delineations, because it sort of implies that they aren't going to test it anyway.
Right.
Right.
You know, because like I remember I used to donate blood like fairly often, and then one time I went in to go do it, and I had just been in one of those countries where you're not allowed to like donate for like a year because you've been in that country. And I was like, what? And I was like really disheartened because I was like, I'm going to go do something useful with myself today. And then I was like, that's incredibly dumb. I didn't even do anything in that country that changed my risks. And so, you know, like, and then I just started getting a lot of tattoos, and then you can't donate for that. And it's like all of these things where it's like, all right, well, you've kind of boxed out a lot of people for kind of arbitrary reasons, because you should still be testing this blood, because there's people out there doing stuff that's putting them at risk who are not going to answer the questions, you know, on this stuff the way you're scanning for, but like they're still doing things that put them at risk.
Yeah. And people can also lie. Everyone, I just want to put it out there, lying is an option. It's something you can do. Situation in your life, that is an option for you. And like a PSA about the tattoo thing, because I also used to donate fairly regularly. And then I just like have chronically low iron. So I'd go every time and they'd be like, nope, sorry. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe I should not be doing this as often. But yeah, then started getting tattoos more and more often. It's three months. Like it's not like if you have any tattoos, you can never donate blood. You know, I think like sometimes people think that, but that's not the case. So if you are tattooed and you've been wanting to donate blood, go out there and do that, because you're clearly not afraid of needles. So get on that.
Yeah, but they have to slap you on the hand until you go home, and then you can come back. Meanwhile, the person who seems to be falling but never hit the ground is able to sell and donate at will. And, you know, no one asks questions about that. you know.
What an image.
Yeah. I've seen it. I've sold blood. Not blood. I've sold plasma. You get more money for the plasma than the blood. I get it. Like, you want to protect the blood supply, but you're going to test the stuff anyway. You want to know the type and you want to screen it for diseases, I'm imagining. It's not like, well, you know, they might have some new disease. I don't think that's the way that works.
Well, you know, if you open it up to, you know, if people fucking love donating blood, you know, people are lining around the block. So if you just open it up to everybody, like, how could they possibly handle all that testing? You know, true. So.
But at least this is better. We're moving in a positive direction on that. Cause like, I remember tweeting something about it and I was just like real saucy at the American Red Cross or something like that. And they were like, it's not our fault, it's the FDA. And I'm like, yeah, but I feel like you have more say in this than I do. So you could probably give them recommendations. So that will take us to our next regular segment, which is fucking idiot, fucking brilliant. So we got a real dumb thing that we're going to talk about, and then we will cleanse the palate. So the dumb thing in the other state where we're always talking about dumb things that are happening. Welcome to Texas. where because the overturning of Roe v. Wade, it's now state by state, and Texas had super ancient rules about like helping somebody get an abortion means you go to jail for 10 years. Plus they put in some new ones that are about, you know, aiding in abortions. And a woman in Texas, Brittany Silva, got an abortion, as is her right to do, and her friends helped her do it because she was escaping an abusive relationship with a husband who proved that he needed to get left, because after she got the abortion, he is now seeking wrongful death as a lawsuit against the friends and the abortion activists who helped her do a self-managed abortion. So, yeah, just basically proved that it was right to leave him and that he shouldn't be a dad, because that's not the reaction of a emotionally healthy person.
Yeah. Right. They were getting a divorce.
Yeah.
When she found out she was pregnant, that's what happened, and was like, I don't want this baby, and I know he'll try to use it against me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in my best interest to not have this pregnancy anymore. Mm-hmm. And her friend, the article's hilarious because her friend was like, great, I'm on your side. Also, delete this conversation now. Yeah. I'll talk to you in the real world later. And she apparently didn't, or did something with a recycle bin, because her husband went into her files and found the conversation.
Oh,
and
yeah, and talk about a real fucking winner.
And a lot of personal information is in this now public record, which, mm-hmm. again, is a silencing tactic, right? Mm-hmm. The idea being, we can put your business out on the street if you try to do this thing. So mm-hmm. you save yourself by not doing this thing.
Yeah, it's all about power and control. And, like, you know, I'm sure for this horrible dude too, it's,
yeah, yep.
he doesn't give a shit about whether he had a child or not. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, a lawsuit isn't gonna bring that child into the world. There's nothing to gain from this, but I guess money. And then also just making the point of like, I'm in control here. I'm in power here.
Oh yeah. It's just making these people's lives harder. They're suing the women individually for $1 million apiece. Oh, it's like, it's ridiculous. And it really is only, you can't get rid of me.
Yeah. This is mm-hmm. retaliation. And this is also, I mean, it's funny that this is the same time as like, there's a number of lawsuits for defamation that are being used by abusive men to mm-hmm. try to silence their former partners that they abuse. And like, your favorite movie pirate really opened mm-hmm. the door for that. Mm-hmm. So it's been a thing that other famous douchebags have been doing. Mm-hmm. And now just any old abusive man, it doesn't have to be famous, can go and use this charge of defamation to continue to abuse somebody.
It's using the courts to just continue the abuse and just like take it to a new level.
Yeah.
It's also this really weird, murky thing, because like in the Texas law, there can't be charges against the abortion patient. Right. And so there's a really interesting thing where it's like, okay, so how are you going to say that there was like a criminal act? Because like, for this to be wrongful death, you have to have committed a criminal act. But since the pregnant person can't be charged with homicide, it's not criminal. But like, the guy that basically is behind all this, Jonathan F. Mitchell, he's the former Texas Solicitor General and architect of the 6-week ban. He has like a whole history of just like winning these terrible laws, like just making a terrible anti-LGBT, anti-union, and anti-abortion laws, and being really successful with them. And so it's like such a weird legal thing. You're gonna just need to have dumb, stupid legal gymnastics in the correct federal judge or whatever to make sure that this doesn't set a new precedent.
Yeah, hope the ACLU is listening.
Yeah. I mean, for every, like, you know, from that to like gun control issues and the way that like we're kind of in the garbage situation we are with interpretation of the Second Amendment, it's like, got to give it to the conservatives. They play the legal long game and they're good at it and they're organized.
It's like, it's a party full of rubes, but you would be wrong to assume that they're all stupid. There mm-hmm. are very smart, evil people
yeah.
who work tirelessly to make this world a worse place mm-hmm. so that they can stand with more money and win some kind of ideological battle over who is allowed to be happy. Mm-hmm. And that was very succinct, Daryl.
Yeah.
Yeah. And these people fucking suck.
Yeah.
And,
this guy fucking sucks. The guy who mm-hmm. was the architect of this plan, who helped him bring this lawsuit for it, that guy sucks. And this is a reminder that to all the Republican women listening, there's maybe one, just like, I just want to remind you that feminism has brought you the ability to have your own checking account and to not be considered mm-hmm. the property of the man you married. So like maybe don't chain yourself up to a Republican man because if Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert have learned anything at all, they learned that like they want to be able to be in control of their own lives, and they both had real nasty, messy divorces because they did mm-hmm. not actually want to be the subservient little trad wives that the GOP men want them to be. So
yeah.
And yeah, just because you're not being abused doesn't mean that you can't be. Just because it's not happening to you doesn't mean that it's not important. I can't believe I'm saying this in 2023.
Yeah. Or even just the idea that like trad wives are even a thing, that just this idea that there are people like, you know, that are just like, no, like, it's a woman's place to be secondary to her husband and serve his needs and, you know, obey his rule or whatever. So it's kind of like even appealing to them with feminism together. Like, yeah, well, I don't think I should have my own checking account.
Yeah. And you know what? If you don't want to have one, don't. I think you're dumb. I think you're setting yourself up to be at the whim of a person who obviously doesn't care about your individual well-being, and that's fine as long as you pay your taxes, fucking live your life. It's the trying to impose it on everyone,
yeah,
right,
saying just, that there's like a yeah. right way to do it.
These are trying to be financially responsible because, you know, you give, she has a credit card, women be shopping.
You're right. You just can't stop a woman from shopping.
We all know it.
Exactly.
I just wish that all these like folks who just like really get off on, you know, the trad wife life and these like bioessentialist ideas of gender, I wish that they could just own up to the fact that what they're doing is a kink. It is a fetish mm-hmm. that they have. They are doing a role play, and this is about a power dynamic, and plenty of people engage in that in a consensual, healthy way. Mm-hmm. Just go to some munches, read some stuff on like healthy kink dynamics, and leave me the fuck out of it. Because
yeah,
like,
see, but that's the issue, though. I think, and I'm speaking out of my ass, right? But I think that they don't think, they would hate for it to be known as a kink. It's like, no, this is just the way everyone should be fucking.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you're doing a weird thing. This is like feet. This is just like feet. This is just like feet. You're not different.
We're not yucking anybody's yum.
No, I'm not saying that it's bad or wrong. I'm saying it's not for me, but you are doing the same thing as a guy who licks armpits. That's y'all. Maybe it's a very specific thing y'all like.
Maybe that's the answer, is the kink communities to start like fully embracing like panelists at conventions and stuff. And they'll be like, oh, yeah. You don't want to get associated with this, and they'll all stop.
It's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing. Like at your next like kink convention, like invite these people to come speak on how they do their like 24/7 master slave role play, because like, you know, it's always interesting to hear how individuals work those sort of dynamics.
Yeah, we should be fighting for their rights to not be kink shamed.
Right.
They that will suddenly stop on a dime.
I would love that. I thought it was a conference on traditional family ethics. And when I got there, they were like, life as a beat has a 24-hour BDSM. They're like, what do you mean? It's like, well, actually, if you look at that, it's exactly your life.
And we support what you are doing.
Look, as long as you're coming. But I'm not. Well, I think you must like that.
Well, that's also part of the kink, right? Like,
right.
You don't deserve to as a woman.
That's the, yeah. You get off on not getting off. Yeah. And that's fine. I get off on getting off. We're different, but equally valid people.
Yes. Lifetime of edging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Spread the word that
yeah.
Trad Wife Dynamics, it's just a kink. And if you don't support it, you're a kink shamer. And you embrace these people so that they run far, far away from us.
On the note of things that we like very deeply and part of the stuff that gives us purpose and meaning and sense of self, we're going to take it to our final segment, which is fucking brilliant. And today it's not even a piece of news. It is just the fact that as of this recording, I think it was 11 days ago, the video for Lipstick Lover by Janelle Monáe came out. Mm-hmm. And it has already gotten about 1.5 million views. And we're just going to just sit here and bask in the genius that is Janelle Monáe.
I can't believe the rest of the world watched that 1.4 million times. That is something. That is something.
It wasn't just you, Daryl. It was
I thought I was putting up good numbers. come to find out the rest of the world watched it.
Yeah, how many times have you seen it now?
With or without the sound is really the question. The reason I've played it without sound is because I'll be at like shows or I'll be at bars and I'll be like, have you seen the new Gentleman? And people be like, wait, what? No? And I'll be like, you don't even need to listen to the words. And I just put it on quiet. And then no one talks for the 3.5 minutes that the song is. It's just a lot of, well, there it is.
Yeah. I just watched it for the first time when I realized, when I got a calendar alert 10 minutes before we were doing it. And I think I didn't get to like fully immerse myself, but I think my favorite part was the moment where it's just like a woman holding like a rolled up napkin, like a red napkin between her legs. It just like looks like pussy. It's like, oh, we are going for it. We are just anything can be sex.
and sex is fun, and it doesn't have to necessarily be sex and sexuality.
Yeah.
It can be fun, and it can be as luscious as kissing the pointy shoe. And also as fun as jumping into a pool in a big onesie.
That part's craziness to me. That's the one part. If you haven't already seen the video, first of all, do it immediately after this podcast. Do yourself a solid. And it gets better with repeated viewings, to be honest.
And you should, it's on YouTube, but you do have to log in because it is age restricted, like responsible people do.
Yes. Because Janelle Monáe, who first...
His whole butt's in it. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they have been sort of doing this arc across their career. They started out dressed very, like, buttoned up and, like, I guess sort of androgynous, which makes sense given their gender identity. I suppose they were also modeling themselves after people like James Brown and Prince and stuff like that. And then has become more and more overtly sexual. I mean, like the video for Pink obviously was just one big metaphor with like big vulva pants and everything. But then this is arguably like just softcore porn that's also beautiful art. And it's just, it's just delightful. It is filled with beautiful people. And it's very joyful.
And makes me want to do sit-ups. And it's all in support of their new album, The Age of Pleasure, which is coming out on June 9th. You see what they did there? See what they did there? It comes out on 6/9.
Nice.
Everybody.
it's really wonderful to, I think, see that, and you know, as a person, like you can kind of be all sorts of different things, and like, you know, your gender identity doesn't have to be, you know, or just like assumptions that someone may make about your gender identity and how that correlates to your sexuality. It's like, no, you can just be who you are and enjoy it. And
the
love and
totally. And I know there's the right wing talking point of why does everybody's sexuality just have to be on display? Can't it just be a personal thing that you have? And it's like, the First Amendment is not about the speech you like.
Yeah.
First Amendment is about protecting the speech you don't. You don't have to tell anybody who you like to have sex with, especially since your views make you completely unfuckable. You can keep that shit to yourself. But it's important, especially for the people you are persecuting in states like Florida and Texas, to know that there are people living in other places where they can put their tax dollars that are living happily and free. And just being in that way is a political act. Mm-hmm. And so, how could I be the co-host of a 10-year-long show about sex, gender, and the fun of it without being in support of it? The hell, our first ever show, we just played Blurred Lines at the end.
Wow, that's a throwback. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love this video because, like, I mean, it honestly wasn't until like the third time through that I was like, oh yeah, this song is catchy too. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, mm-hmm. There's a song playing. And that's happened to me with Janelle Monáe's music before, where like the first time I was just so, I think, overwhelmed by the stimuli, because their music videos are always so visually impressive. Yeah. Even if it's quite simple and it's like a pretty, you know, like minimalist aesthetic, still really, really cool artistically. And then mm-hmm. they'll make songs that like continue to be bangers years later, because they're not just like trendy and easy pop songs. They're ones that you don't necessarily catch right away, but then become, you know, like timeless. Like I have Janelle Monáe songs that I bring back in my dance classes years and years and years later. And this is just such a sexy video and so very clearly directed by, if not Janelle Monáe's like vision directly, but like inspired by it. It's not male gazey, like a lot of very sexual videos are. Like there's a ton of very sexual videos where it's just like, you might as well be advertising whatever product along with women's bodies, but this is something else.
Yeah.
I think that the teacher in Florida, this should be the next level. Run this after a long day of standardized testings and be like, I showed this because we were talking about water and there's
we were talking about brushing our teeth.
Yeah.
And there's a very good scene where Janelle is brushing their teeth, and then when they go to spit, there are two dudes making out behind them in the shower. That was the first one that struck out to me, because I was like, ha, I like that one. And it's very quick.
You get more water in the shower. So if they were talking about conservation,
yes,
they were talking about chemistry, you know, just like what's H2O? It's
right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's plenty to learn about in that video.
And I will continue my independent study.
Yes. Yeah. Shout out to Janelle Monáe, just so you know that everyone that is currently in this meeting is a fan.
Yeah. I will say I've only been a fan for that now two albums. The way you make me, the Make Me Feel video was a sea change in my life, especially because Helium Comedy Club had just put a Chromecast on the TV at the bar, so one could hijack it. And so, yeah, whenever I was there, which was often, everybody got to hear Make Me Feel a lot, because she was wearing see-through pants. They were wearing see-through pants that were very, very expensive. I tried to buy them for my wife. My God, them things like $400 a piece.
Thanks.
Yikes. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
It's like jazz. It's like you're paying for the fabric that you don't have. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. So we are coming up on our time. So with that, Allison, thank you so much for finding time for us. Where can people find out more about you?
Oh, I mean, I tweet every like 5 months or so. So. Nice. Allison L. Zeidman on Twitter. Right now it's a lot of strike related stuff and a lot of retweeting. This is relevant to this podcast. People are, you know, talking about how not only was Why the Last Man tragically canceled, Now it's being one of the things being removed from streaming platforms, just like with no, you know, there's going to be no other way to see it. So you don't have that long. Go out and watch that is my plug, not for myself, but for a TV show that I think did an exceptional job of adapting a comic book story, but especially in terms of gender and sexuality and inclusive, just being so much more inclusive and I think informative.
It was a great show. Yeah.
I didn't watch the show or read the comic, but I do remember when it came out. So
I highly
I've remember. Got homework.
Yeah. Don't look for me. Actually, do not find me anywhere.
All right. How about you, Daryl? Where can people find out more about you?
You can go to darylcomedy.com, D-A-R-R-Y-L comedy.com. If you can't spell comedy, my comedy's not for you. you can see me live and in person in these streets. I'm outside. Two of the days I'll be outside, June 30th and July 1st, when I will be headlining the Punchline Philly. Hey. It's my first ever Friday, Saturday in Philadelphia, nice. The city that I'm in too much for not being a resident of. So yeah, there's that. And then even the week after that, I will be headlining at the Port Comedy Club in Baltimore, Maryland. So there is, and I'm in the Jersey City Comedy Festival. Listen, if you are on I-95 and you haven't seen me do comedy, you have no excuse. By the end of the summer, you should have been here. I'm talking to the Eastern Seaboard, except for Florida.
Yeah. They'll learn something. They should come.
Yeah.
Very true. You'll definitely learn something. You might even learn antiquated information about the process to sell your blood and blood plasma. as I now hustle to see if I can figure out a postscript to the joke that explains the thing, because I'm an idiot who cares about facts. Dr. Timmery, where can the people find out more about you?
They can find out more at drtimmery.com. So that's DrTimmere. And you can find not only links to the stories that we discuss here, but a bunch of other sexuality news. You can find all of my events there, including we have the Slut Church Summer of Sin. So it's going to be every single Tuesday, June through August, of metal, BDSM, burlesque. Plus, we have some pop-ups happening. So if you can't make it on a Tuesday night, we're going to have a pop-up once a month that's on a weekend. And we also have upcoming shows like Get You a Babe Who Can Do Both and Safe Word, which is an all kink show. So you can
invite the trad wives.
We have done some, like Celine Rose did a Desperate Housewives number at Safe Word. Actually, it was delightful. You can find all that there. You can find me on Instagram, all of my burlesque stuff. I finally changed the handle, so it's now honeytree.evileye, and it is no longer a weird nickname that my dissertation chair gave me when I didn't realize Instagram would become an important part of my career. So you can follow me there if you just want to see burlesque stuff. And you can see Daryl and me and Alicia Gonzalez and Kat Mosley. And we are going to be celebrating 10 years of DTF on June 24th at Frankie Bradley's with our special anniversary show. So coming out, we got some surprises and games and a whole bunch of stuff. We would love to see you in person. And we are so grateful for your 10 years or however long you've been listening of support.
Yeah. And speaking of support, so happy that you did it. And we encourage you to do it. Like, share, subscribe, tell your friends, call people you know in Texas and be like, I know it sucks, but you can at least listen to this for an hour.
Yeah. And also thank you to our editor and producer, Flirt Vonnegut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you again, Allison, for finding time for us. We so appreciate having you on here.
It's always a pleasure.
And yeah. Thank you everyone for listening, and we will talk at you next time.
Bye. With the team if you ain't down to fuck.